What is going on, everybody? My name is Eric. You're listening to the Side Questing Podcast. I hope you're all having a fantastic day, evening, month, year, wherever, whenever in time and space you might be listening. As always, thank you so much for choosing to spend just a little bit of your week, your day, your time with us. It really means a lot. We know how busy you are, and hopefully we can provide a little bit of entertainment while you do whatever it is you guys do. Be awesome and beautiful people, obviously. That's probably the most important thing, right? So hope you all are doing well. Today is going to be a very exciting episode. I think you probably know what we're already going to be talking about. Very, very big game that came out last Friday. Very big for me, at least. Something I was very excited about. Of course, we're talking about Metroid Dread. Before we dive in, though, I want you to know that this will be a spoiler-free discussion about Metroid Dread. I won't be diving into any of the finer points of the story. I won't be diving into any of the ways that the levels are laid out, what order you get power-ups, how to beat some of the Emmy encounters. I have played this game for a decent amount of time. I'm not sure how many hours, but I've been playing it most of the weekend. I feel like I'm relatively close to the end, and I feel like because of that, I can make some judgments and comparisons to how this game turned out and if our long wait for another Metroid game paid off and if I think we'll ever get another one. This will be more of a discussion about what Mercury Steam was trying to accomplish by making Metroid Dread, and it will be a discussion on Metroidvanias in general, specifically pertaining to the ones that I have played myself and just to some of the other ones that are out there in the wild that I haven't played, but I know that their reputation precedes them. First of all, before we get started, though, I always got to shout out my guys over at Hyper Potions for letting us use a piece of their music for our intro song. It's absolutely incredible. All the links to their YouTube channel and the song are in the description of every episode. Please make sure you go check it out because those guys are absolutely incredible. And tell them SideQuesting Podcast sent you until they realize who we are. It's a strategy. I'm going to have them on the show one day, hopefully. So, yeah, why don't we take a moment and dive into Metroid Dread. As for my personal experience with the genre of quote-unquote Metroidvanias, it varies. I didn't play, contrary to how many people experience this genre, playing Castlevania or a Metroid game. I actually did play a Metroid game. This is my introduction to Metroidvanias. But it wasn't Super Metroid, and it wasn't Metroid for the NES, or even Metroid 2 for the GBA. The first Metroid I ever experienced was Metroid Fusions, and Fusions holds a very special place in my heart. I think it's a fantastic title, faults and all. I understand now, looking back, that Metroid Fusions is a little bit more of a linear game compared to, obviously, Super Metroid and Zero Missions, which I think is another fantastic Metroid game. As is Super Metroid, I have played through most of Super Metroid. I just never got around to finishing it. So I know enough about that game to be able to talk about it intelligently. And I've seen it speedrun. I've seen it played through to completion. So I know enough about that game to be able to incorporate it into the conversation. Same thing with Zero Missions. Now, Fusions. So basically, let's define what a Metroidvania is first, right? So Metroidvania is a style of game that was popularized, if you don't know this by now, and you probably already do, by the game Metroid, as well as Castlevania. And basically, the very, very, very simplest description I can think of for these types of games is you're dropped into a level or a world to explore, and throughout progressing through these levels, these worlds, whatever, you gain items, you gain abilities that help you unlock or progress through more of the level, through more of the game. That's pretty much boils down to what Metroid is and what Castlevania is. Metroid, especially for the NES, was a labyrinth of confusion and sadness because there's no map in that game and it's very difficult to get through. And that game is just completely unforgiving, as is the first Castlevania. First Castlevania is a little more straightforward based on my understanding of it. I would say out of the Metroidvania part, I have less experience with the Vania side of it because I've never had the pleasure to play any Castlevania games in my career. And I think that's definitely something I need to remedy sometime soon, because I know there are some really, really great Castlevania games out there. They just released the Advanced Castlevania Advance version, which is all the GBA games. I know that Symphony of the Night is supposed to be a fantastic, fantastic Castlevania game. So I'm definitely going to have to go back and remedy that. It's definitely a blight on my gaming career that I have not played any kind of Castlevania. So that's basically what a Metroid is. And like I said, I started off playing Metroid Fusions and Metroid Zero Mission. And then several years later, a couple years ago, in fact, and a little bit this year, I went back and played Super Metroid. And it wasn't really until I heard the buzz about Metroid Dread coming out that I understood how impactful and how important Super Metroid was. I played Super Metroid and I enjoyed it at the time, and I enjoyed my time with it this year as well. But I didn't realize, for a game in one of Nintendo's franchises that didn't sell as well as Mario or Zelda, how impactful and how important and how great this game actually was, because I kind of have a unique perspective on Metroid as a whole because I played Fusions first. So in my mind, Fusions is always kind of what Metroid has always been. I understand now that that's not the case, but Fusions and by extension Zero Missions was how I first experienced it. And I still love both of those games a lot because one of the things that all Metroid games do a great job of is creating intense atmosphere, creating super intense atmosphere with the music, making you feel like you're isolated, like you're exploring an alien planet, like you're all by yourself. All the game's design and the music and the atmosphere and everything like that lends itself to creating that atmosphere. And that's kind of the point they are trying to hammer home when they name this game Dread. Obviously, the dread part of it, they want you to feel like you're alone, like you're helpless, like you're, you know, in that atmosphere of trapped underground trying to escape. That's really what they are going for in Dread. They combined a lot of the elements from Fusions, which introduced a great mechanic, albeit it was scripted, where, okay, I'm gonna have to dive into the story of Metroid a little bit. So especially Fusions, what ends up happening is Samus encounters a parasite called the X that can mimic any host that it infects. So she gets infected on one of the missions that she's on. Her life is saved by a vaccine made from the last DNA of the last Metroid, making her immune to the X. What ends up happening is her infected suit parts and the X parasites get sent to a space station in space, obviously. Where else would a space station be? And there's an explosion because the X parasite mimics her in her power suit at her full capabilities. Because of her infection and surgery and injection with the vaccine, Samus has lost all of her abilities. So obviously this is the part where you have to run through, get all your abilities, you know, the standard Metroid trope, if you will. Same thing that kind of happens in every Metroid game. You lose all your powers, you have to get them back, because the powers are a unique and interesting way to unlock more of the world to explore. So they can't let you loose at the start of the game with every single power, because obviously then you'll just be able to go through the entire world no problem, out of order, whatever. So that's a basic breakdown of the story. That's where Dread leaves off, obviously, with that kind of the story. But Fusions introduces the SAX, which is the X parasite mimicking Samus in her full power suit while you're a weak little weak person. And what that does is, throughout certain parts in the story, the SAX will show up, and it's heavily alluded to by your ship's computer, who is kind of your helping hand through the story of Fusions, that the SAX is hunting you, and you could run into it any time. And if you run into it, you'll for surely die. You stand no chance against beating it. And that really creates this atmosphere of, I think Fusions creates Dread, because if you're playing through it the first time, obviously if you're playing through it later times, you obviously know when that's going to happen and when those kind of story moments are. And looking back now, the SAX AI is kind of easy to dupe and get away from. So, but at the time, that was terrifying. And just going through a door and the SAX being there was absolutely terrifying. It created a real sense of what this game was trying to go for, which was dread. And that's where I think Fusions really succeeded, despite how linear its story was compared to other Metroid games, and despite how it just seemed like Samus is running from A to B fixing things. I think Fusions really, at the time, was carrying on the Metroid tradition of creating this isolation, this fear, and this dread. I think it really was. So that's kind of my experience with Metroid as a whole. I went back and I played Super Metroid. I can't think my words today. They're very difficult. Went back and played Super Metroid. Thought that game was great. It's fantastic. I just obviously have a more soft spot in my heart for Zero Mission and for Fusions. I don't think we can talk about this game either without mentioning the progress and the advancements that's been made in the Metroidvania category by games other than Metroid and Castlevania. One that comes to mind and that I've played extensively, have extensive experience with, is, I don't know if it's 2016 or whatever, it's sometime in the mid to late 2010s, was, of course, Team Cherry's Hollow Knight. Now, I might make a bold statement here, and feel free to argue with me on Twitter if you'd like to, but I believe that Hollow Knight is still, to this day, and spoilers too, even after playing a good chunk of Metroid Dread, I think Hollow Knight is still the number one undefeated ranked Metroidvania that has ever been made. Hollow Knight really, really nailed and expanded on everything that Metroid and Castlevania tried to do. The world that Team Cherry creates, this nest world of these bug people, truly feels... They capture such an atmosphere of where this world is dying. It was a once great kingdom that's now abandoned. People are going mad from this disease, and you're a little bug creature you don't know anything about, just tossed into the nest, doing whatever you got to do. Obviously, we're not going to go into the deep lore and story of Hollow Knight, but that game's just so incredible. And the way you can do things too, it's so open-ended. You can get certain power-ups out of, in different orders. You can go after certain bosses in different orders. You can skip bosses altogether. You don't even have to fight some of them to complete the game. Obviously, if you want 100% it, you have to do all that stuff. But you don't have to do it to beat the main storyline. What you do in that game will affect the outcome that you get after completing the game. It's so good. The music, the atmosphere, the level design, each level is very unique, or I guess not level, but each part of the map is so unique. From the Forgotten Crossroads to the Fungal Wastes, the City of Tears, the Crystal Peaks, the Abyss, the Deep Nest. Man, you want to talk about creating a feeling of dread and just being on your own and terror? Go into the Deep Nest and go into the Abyss, and the music and that location and just what's there and kind of some of the lore that gets revealed just really makes you feel on edge playing through those areas. It's something that I have rarely experienced in games, and it's something that I haven't experienced since playing that. It's unbelievable. I could sit here and do a whole bunch of episodes on Hollow Knight. It's that great. I could do a Let's Play series because it's incredible. And something else too that Hollow Knight nailed was its difficulty. Hollow Knight, while being an excellent example of a Metroidvania, is also very, very challenging, to the point where some people might find it super punishing. They did a great job of mixing this Souls-style gameplay where it's tough bosses and difficult enemy encounters, and if you die, you'll lose your souls or whatever it is the currency is in this game that you're collecting, and you have to go back there and fight a shade of yourself to get your stuff back. It's one of the best games I've played in my entire life, and I would be willing to bet that people that could get past the difficulty would also definitely agree with me. I think that Hollow Knight is the shining example of what the series could be. I don't think it's an example of how all games in the genre should be, because a lot of people aren't going to like that difficulty. And obviously, just because a game is difficult doesn't mean it's fun. And obviously, you can make a Metroidvania game without having it be balls-crushingly difficult. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make here. So that's kind of where I kind of stand with Metroidvanias. Now, before I finally dive in and start talking about Dread, I want you guys to understand one thing here. Metroid Dread is not Super Metroid, and Metroid Dread is not Hollow Knight. It is simply not these games. It tries to take certain elements from both of these games and throughout, you know, Metroid games and Castlevania games throughout its history and incorporate them and build off of them. But the part, and I want to start off with the part where Metroid Dread fails. Metroid Dread is, I always felt like when I was playing Dread that I was being guided along. I never felt like I was lost. I always felt like there were areas I could go back to with the upgrades that I had found. And I feel like the upgrades were strategically placed to keep guiding me along the path that the story was kind of driving, if that makes any sense. For example, you know, you get certain items to unlock certain doors that allow you to progress. Like you need a missile to unlock a door, you need the grapple beam to unlock a door, things like that. It's very strategically, and the map, by the way, for the story they're trying to tell, it's very well crafted to, you know, allow for some back exploration once you get more power-ups. But it always, I always felt like, and I've talked to some people that said that they felt lost, but I always felt like I was being pushed forward by finding power-ups that I knew then to go back and try out different doors or different areas that would progress the story forward. This is not how it's done, for example, in Super Metroid. Super Metroid is very open-ended. It does have a certain order of things that you can, a natural order of things that you can get, upgrades that you can get that allow you to progress through the game naturally. But it also allows, if you're a very skilled player and a creative use of Samus's abilities, to sequence break the game. You can get certain upgrades out of order. You can go to certain areas before that you're supposed to, not supposed to be able to, but you can go to certain areas outside of the suggested order. And this is obviously what speedrunners do to, you know, destroy this game in 25 minutes flat or whatever the current world record speedrun is. I think it's around 20 or 25 minutes. It's super incredible. Sidebar, one of my favorite YouTube channels called Summoning Salt does awesome histories of world record progressions, and Super Metroid is one of them. I would highly recommend going to watch that one because it's super fascinating. So Super Metroid is very open-ended. Metroid Dread is less so, and that's because of one key difference between Super Metroid and Metroid Dread, is that Super Metroid has kind of one exposition dump at the start of the game. It tells you what's going on, why you're doing what you're doing, and what your objective is. And then it puts you on the planet and it leaves you alone. It does not give you any more exposition dumps. There's no characters that come along and tell you, hey, you need to go here. Hey, this is happening. Hey, such and such. Super Metroid's biggest strength to this day, and it's also Hollow Knight's biggest strength as well, is being able to tell the story with very little to no exposition. A lot of the story is told in the background, in the level, in the gameplay, in the atmosphere, in the things that you accomplish going through these maps, going through these ruins, going through these levels. Metroid Dread doesn't do that. Metroid Dread has an obvious story that it wants to tell, and has these very, at times, very heavy, very lengthy exposition dumps about what you're doing, why you're doing it, where you need to go, and what you need to accomplish. And that is, it's not the sole difference between, you know, Hollow Knight and Super Metroid and Metroid Dread, but it is the key difference. It is the key difference. Because there is more story integrated with Dread than there is Super Metroid, the game can't really, at least not to what I've discovered, the game can't allow you to sequence break and go to certain areas before you're ready, because the story progression is also linked with the areas that you visit, if that makes sense. And I don't want to say too much to kind of spoil the gameplay, but story progression and level exploration are very linked in a way that they are not for Super Metroid and they are not for Hollow Knight. Super Metroid, you can kind of fight the bosses in any order you want once you get enough upgrades or once you get enough to go into certain areas or know how to sequence break the game. Hollow Knight, the main three bosses you're trying to fight to unlock the big black egg that you go into and fight the Hollow Knight. Super Metroid doesn't really tell you where to go. Hollow Knight marks on the map where you're supposed to go, but it doesn't really tell you how to get there or what order you have to go there in. So I think that's really clever of telling you, hey, these bosses are somewhere in this dark abyss of this map, go out there and find them, do them in any order. Is you have to do three of them, though. And I think that's where the main difference in Dread is. It's got a very specific story it's trying to tell, and it's got a very specific order of things it wants you to do things in. Now, like I said earlier, you can go back and you can explore and you can go into certain different areas once you get power-ups that you know that you can visit areas at. But those areas are mostly just, oh, I can go back and get that item now, or I can go back and do this, or I can go back and link together these paths and make future travel through these areas easier. The traveling, the backtracking never really leads to any kind of discovery of hidden paths that deviate from the story, if that makes any sense. Whereas like in Super Metroid, you had the map, and then at least, well, I'm not 100% sure on Super Metroid because I played it a while ago, but at least in Metroid Fusions, and this is another example of a very linear game, which is, I think, why Fusions is kind of looked down upon compared to Super. Any area outside of the established map, like when you filled in the map, it was filled in with like pink or like flashing pink holographic or whatever. And then any area outside the map was green. Hidden areas that you discover was green pathing. That, and pink and green obviously being two contrasting colors, so you can easily tell what is a secret area, what is a main area that the game willingly unveils to you. Dread kind of does something similar with color-codedness. When it reveals the map to you, it just kind of shows you big squares as to where like the map goes through. The areas where the Emmys are clearly defined, and we'll get to that a little later. But there's not really like any... Like, I always felt like I was discovering part of the map, not really like a secret area that was outside of the map that I could use to jump to different parts of the game, if that makes any sense. And like I said, that is because the story, Metroid Dread relies on its story, and the story kind of railroads it in a certain direction. There's a loss of freedom when you do something like that, because there are several points throughout the story where there are these, you have to trigger these lore dumps to progress the game forward. And, you know, I tweeted on Twitter that not every Metroidvania game has to be Super Metroid, and that's fine. And Metroid Dread is a fine game. It's not obviously not Super Metroid, but looking back now and seeing and thinking about Super Metroid in the light of Dread, I can see why people revere it so much and why it's regarded as such a great game. Now, Dread on its own, despite that one glaring thing that I noticed playing it, it's a fantastic game. I think it's awesome. Mercury Steam did a great job. Samus has never controlled better. Her controls are super smooth. She feels fast. Despite the fact that she lost all her powers again, she feels powerful. She interacts with the environment really awesome. Like if you go up to a ledge where you like can't like get through or slide through, she'll put her hand on the wall. She fits into the world really well. And just movement is super crisp, and obviously it has to be in this game because the game's core gimmick is you're sent onto this planet and these robots called Emmys, E-M-M-I's, I'm not sure what it stands for, I'm not going to look it up right now because I don't remember, they're just always called Emmys. The basic premise of the story was the ex-parasite was spotted on this planet ZDR after they thought they were going to be extinct. Samus is going there to investigate. Before they sent Samus, the Galactic Federation, which I have no idea why Samus is still fucking working for them, but, you know, whatever. Job security is hard to come by these days. Whatever. The Galactic Federation sent these six Emmy robots that are supposed to be, like, indestructible, made of this super powerful armor plating, like, to explore the area and gather samples and stuff. Well, the Emmys go dark, and the Galactic Federation sends Samus in to clean up the mess, like, they always send her in to clean up the mess and almost get killed and lose all her powers and almost die. So it's established pretty quickly that the Emmy robots sent in by the Federation are compromised by somebody or something or some interference on the planet, and they are out to kill you. You are being hunted by these Emmy robots. They want to remove you from their areas, from their life, basically. Now, this is where the Dread part of the game comes in, right? Because the premise of the game, as we were shown in trailers and by gameplay, was that these Emmys would be hunting you and you would feel like this kind of sense of foreboding and the sense of quote unquote dread as you were traversing through the map, because you knew that these Emmys, these things that could kill you, are looking for you. And it even starts at the beginning of the game when you talk to your ship's computer. He says, you cannot fight the Emmys, like you will die. You don't have the ability to fight them yet. And when they catch you, you have a very, very small window. One of the cool things that they brought over from the 3DS Metroid games, which I didn't have the pleasure of playing, was the melee counter where you kind of swing your arm cannon when an enemy flashes and you can counter it and it sets it up for a quick kill. Really awesome. If that mechanic feels absolutely fantastic. So when an enemy catches you, it goes into a cutscene where you have two, like, I don't know how small of a frame of time it is, but it feels like it's like one frame. If it's, this is a 60 FPS game, I think, or it can run on 60 FPS, 30, whatever. It's one frame to when the Emmy flashes and you have a chance to do that counter. Otherwise, you're dead. It's instant kill. The Emmys instant kill you when they catch you because they're just not shown any mercy. So it creates this sense of anytime you encounter an Emmy, it's like, I have to get away because it's instant death. And if I can't get away, that's it. You do have a very small window of opportunity to pull that counter off. I would say in the several hours of gameplay that I have put into Metroid Dread, I've only pulled off that counter for the Emmys twice. Two times, not counting the one scripted time that they give you at the beginning to just show you that you can use the counter to get away. Two times out of probably dozens of times I've been captured by the Emmy. Very difficult to pull off. It truly does make it feel like a last ditch effort to get away from them. So, yeah. The thing that I felt was kind of misleading about this concept of the Emmy, and I probably shouldn't have thought of it this way, is I felt the Emmy would be actively hunting me down and showing up as I'm exploring the map. That's not how it works. So the Emmy are stuck in their assigned quote-unquote Emmy zones. They're parts of the map that when you enter that the Emmy can actively sense you and actively trace you. And they're denoted by like these pixelated doors that have like cubes floating around them. And it's very obvious when you go to enter an Emmy zone. And the Emmy zones are very clearly marked on the map. So you always see when you're about to go into one so that you can mentally prepare yourself and be like, okay, once I enter this part of the map, it's basically a fight for my life. I have to run. I have to survive. And I think that's a very cool mechanic. The thing I did not expect was I did not expect the Emmys to be stuck into confined zones, whereas like once you step out of their zone, they will not pursue you. They're pretty much trapped in that part of the map. And I was kind of let down about that at first. I was like, oh, like, okay, it's kind of just, you know, a temporary thing. But the more I thought about it and the more I played the game, I really enjoyed about how they implemented that, because you can see on the map when you're approaching these Emmy zones and you know the map is taking you that direction. So the dread, quote unquote, there it is again. Take a shot every time I say dread, drinking game. Just, you know, be responsible about it. So you know you're coming up to these areas on the map and they kind of, this feeling in your stomach and in your chest kind of starts to build. You're like, oh, I have to go into this area to progress through the map more. And what they've been really smart about is putting the Emmy zones in the map in a certain way as to where you're never in them for very long. It's moments at a time or maybe a minute or two at a time. But those minutes are super tense because you're being hunted by a murderous robot that wants to kill you. But they're put in the middle of the map where you have to weave in and out of them to progress and explore and get to where you're going. So it might be like in the middle, smack dab in the middle of it. So you have to like enter on one side, cross out the other side, go up a little bit and then re-enter and cross out the other side, kind of like to zigzag your way to where you're going. And that's really clever level design. That's really clever map design, if you ask me. And I kind of started to think of the Emmy more as like not this intimidating presence that I should be afraid of. It felt more of like a puzzle to me, right? Once you understand that you're only in these Emmy zones for a moment at a time and you're using them to crisscross the map, it kind of becomes a puzzle. It's I have to survive and use little nooks and crannies to hide to get through this area so I can go on to the next safe area. And obviously, you know, by watching the trailers, they give you the means to kill the Emmy. Eventually you find this Omega energy and you can, you know, shoot him in the head and kill him. So, but that's kind of the gimmick of it. And yes, it does feel like Dread, but at this point now, in where I am in my playthrough, it feels more like a puzzle. It feels more like a puzzle to complete and to kind of check off than just because I've been killed by the Emmy so many times, and it kind of lost that luster a little bit. But I really like it as a mechanic. I think I liked the initial appearance of the SAX better, just because I think Fusions did a great job of introducing that character and the music that plays when the SAX is around, walking around and just kind of slowly stalking back and forth to find you and kill you. Whereas the Emmy are just kind of crawling around everywhere. They'd make beep, boop, bops, little R2-D2 noises. Also, too, when you enter an Emmy zone, it's very distinct when you do. Things are a little more grayer. They feel like a little more, I don't want to say pixelated, but a little more like foggy. And then that lifts. You can really tell the difference when you defeat an Emmy in that zone, and it lifts the kind of fog of war that's on the map in the Emmy zone. But I think it's a fine mechanic. I think it's great. I think it does what it sets out to do initially. For me, it feels more like a puzzle, a challenge to complete now. It doesn't fill me with dread as much. It fills me more with a curiosity of, okay, it makes me look at my map more strategically to see the nooks and crannies on the maps and go, okay, I can kind of go down here and I can hide in this spot, or I can go over here and there's walls I can climb on over here. It really makes me plot my chart through the map a little more carefully, definitely. And don't think the instant wipe mechanic gets old. It really doesn't. I've been insta-wiped probably 15 to 20 times. The great thing about Dread is that it loads super fast. And this is taking a lesson from, you know, from games like Hades and games like your roguelike games. Yeah, it puts you back in the action super fast, and it puts you right outside the Emmy door you last went through as an autosave. It doesn't send you all the way back to your last save point, because that would just be a nightmare, because sometimes you do traverse large sections of the map without being able to save. There are still rooms in which you save. But the auto checkpoint at the last Emmy door you went through is really nice, because it gets you right back into the action. It allows you to take another shot at the puzzle right away. I think that definitely helps out that section of the game for sure. As far as, like I said, the level design is really good. Each area seems to be distinct from one another. It does feel a little more homogenous than, say, for example, the areas in Super Metroid and the areas in Hollow Knight. Like, the areas in Hollow Knight are very, very well defined by what features are in them. Obviously, you're going to different areas in Metroid Dread, but it's not as defined, and I think that works just fine, honestly, because it makes it feel more like there's enough difference in each area that you know you're in different areas, but there's kind of a sameness to it all, where you feel like, okay, yeah, this was all part of this underground area where I was. It was built, it was put here intentionally. It's not just a random mishmash of different areas, which, you know, Hollow Knight, it can kind of feel like that some way, like, you know, you're in the Forgotten Crossroads, and then you go two doors over and you're in the Fungal Waste, and you're like, oh, like, that was super jarring. Like, I only went two doors over and now I'm in something that looks completely visually different. And I think that's fine. I haven't really found any problems with Dread's with Dread's layout or with its map. It's very cleverly laid out to make you progress forward. And I think the atmosphere it creates in the story it's trying to tell through that atmosphere, pretty compelling. It's not, obviously not as compelling as Super Metroid, but it's, you know, it's good. I enjoy it. And like I said, this game, I feel like I kind of broke a promise to myself, because when this game first came out and I just saw everyone comparing it to Super Metroid, I was like, well, you need to give this game a chance to be its own game, because, you know, Super Metroid is a legendary game mentioned up there with, you know, Mario 3, Ocarina of Time. You know, it's despite it not selling that well, it's held in very high regard. And I didn't want people to just write it off because, oh, it's not Super Metroid. And I don't think it's fair for this game to put those expectations upon it. Because Super Metroid came out, I don't know, 20 something years ago. It's an older game. And there's been several Metroid titles since Super Metroid, so Dread obviously has the freedom, and not only several Metroid titles, but several fantastic Metroidvania games between Super Metroid and now. So Dread is allowed to draw from all those inspirations to create something that is its own. And I think it definitely has done that. It has created something that, you know, it is not Hollow Knight. It's not Super Metroid. This game is Metroid Dread. But, you know, the reason why I've talked so much about the other two games is because I know that that's how a lot of games are judged sometimes. And I know that some people will not like this game because I knew of a few people immediately who I knew would not like this game just because of the openness that Super Metroid allows is not present in Dread, at least not something that I've experienced. And maybe more time with this game will make me see that there is more openness to it that I just haven't discovered yet. But I think that that openness to some people that hold Super Metroid in very high regard is going to be enough to put them off. But considering Dread as its own game, even though I have compared it to Super Metroid and Hollow Knight because I thought that would make a compelling episode, Dread is a fantastic game. It's beautifully designed. Mercury Steam did a great job. Samus control is great. The world that they built is fantastic. I'm very invested in the story that they're trying to tell, even though they just do it in these big old exposition dumps. They don't tell you things for a very long time, and all of a sudden it's like, here's all this information. I think the power-ups are strategically placed to move you forward in the story, and I think that's great. That's really clever level design. It made me feel powerful playing Samus without making me feel overpowered. I still felt powerful using all the tools at my disposal, but I still realized at any time that I could be taken out by any given enemy, because the enemies do really hurt and pack a punch, at least, you know, in the health and stuff that I have. Maybe I haven't found all the energy tanks or the missiles or whatever. So it's fantastic. Music's pretty good. The music is, I would say the soundtrack is not as iconic as other game soundtracks, but I don't feel like the music in this game is doing the heavy lifting. I feel like the gameplay and the environments are, and the music is just kind of there to add atmosphere. It's very, you know, background music, and interspersed with that is, you know, Samus's theme or the Metroid theme or all these themes that you're used to hearing. The level music is not as memorable as some other Metroid games. It's just not. But the way that they write the music to complement the level that you're in, and especially it's very jarring to go from hearing this background music in the environment that you're in to entering an Emmy zone and then hearing no music at all. Hearing just these beeps and boops and just this one kind of single, it's not even a note, it's like if you heard like a drop of water from a faucet hit and then it kind of just like trails off. That's the best way I can kind of describe it. And that's like the only sound in the beeps of the Emmys, and it's just dead silent. That's a very jarring transition to go from electronic boop 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 like background music to just nothing. And I think that lends to the atmosphere that Dread is trying to establish even more. It's a great use. And who cares if the soundtrack is not as memorable or iconic? The soundtrack accomplishes what it sets out to accomplish. I truly think it does. I won't be listening to this soundtrack working out, but the music complements the game very well. Like, this game it's a very well put together game. It's a very well thought out game. It's a great story so far. I'm invested in this story, which is the conclusion of this arc of the Metroid saga, or whatever you want to call it. There's interesting history and lore dumps about different aspects of the game that haven't been explained that they're fleshing out. And I kind of like that. You know me, I'm a story-driven gamer, and I like to know the lore behind things, and I like to know the reasons behind things. And when you put those things in a game, it only serves to draw me in to the world even more. And something that Metroid Dread does that a lot of games I've played recently, you know, haven't really done, is it just kind of, it draws me in, and I have fun, and I kind of lose track of time. And those games are, you know, hard to come by sometimes, especially if you're not playing something that you enjoy. And I very, very thoroughly am enjoying Metroid Dread. You really just kind of lose yourself in it. And it's despite the fact that it's more linear than Super Metroid, it's still, I want to explore more. I want to get that next upgrade. I want to get that thing that'll let me unlock these doors and go explore this area. And next thing you know, 4 hours have passed and you've explored, and you look at the map and you're like, oh crap, I've explored that much of it. Like, holy cow. It's a fantastic feeling. It's just pure fun. It's pure It's pure fun. The game can be a little challenging, but I don't see it. A lot of articles I've read have complained about how challenging the bosses are. I haven't seen it. I've died a couple times to each boss I've encountered, but it was never anything where I was like upset or just like, oh, darn. It's just like, oh, okay, like, let me go back. Let me try again. Let me be better. And I never felt like they were bosses that were super punishing. I just felt like they were challenging enough to where you had to learn the patterns, kind of learn the strategies, and then you got better as you fought the boss a few times. And I think that's fine. It's similar to how Hades is Hades, and bosses in Hades are going to kick your ass. But eventually, as you play more of the game, you get better and you get some better upgrades and stuff, and it helps you fight the bosses. I think that's pretty smart game design, if you ask me. I think that's great. The boss fights have been, aside from that, I mean, some of the most tense moments, because I've enjoyed a lot of the way that the boss fights have played out. I'm obviously not going to spoil anything for you, but I think those have been fantastic. I'm trying to think if I covered everything that I wanted to talk about, and I think I have. And like I said, I feel kind of bad halfway through this episode, because I said that I wasn't going to make it a one-to-one in comparison to Super Metroid, and that's not fair to do that. It's really not, because Dread is its own game, for sure. And it's a fun game. It's a really good game. It's designed very well. The time that they took to all the little nuances and to make Samus control it the way she does, it's fantastic. I'm enjoying the story. The story is very good and very compelling. Things that I've said before. This game is not Super Metroid, and this game doesn't have to be Super Metroid. Super Metroid is not like the de facto Metroidvania. It's a very good game in its own right, yes, but you shouldn't allow Super Metroid or Hollow Knight or whatever. And this is, I guess, kind of a general rule for gaming in general, right? You shouldn't allow anything that came before to take away from your experience. Like, I guess try and go into a game as open-minded as possible, right? Obviously, that gets hard because obviously nostalgia and things like favoritism get in the way, but Metroid Dread is great. Just because it's not Super Metroid doesn't not make it great. It's a fantastic close to this arc of the story. I really hope this isn't the case. I'm hoping this game sells very well. If this is the last Metroid 2D Metroid game that we get, I think it's great. It's a fantastic send-off. It's everything I could have wanted and I could have asked for. I didn't really ask for anything else. It exceeded all of my expectations that I had for it, which is the mark of a good game. And also the mark of a good game is it's just fun to play. Like, it's some games you can feel like they're a chore to play or a slog to play through, and this game's just fun. It's just fun. Exploring the map is fun. Getting power-ups is fun. Even scheming ways to get away from and overcome the Emmys. It's fun. That's what, and at the end of the day, that's what games are supposed to be. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? It's fun. That's all I can say about it. The reason I just decided to talk about it in conjunction with Hollow Knight and Super Metroid is it gives me a bit of context. It allowed me to get my thoughts together about, you know, it allowed me to look at the past of Metroidvanias and see where they succeeded and look at Dread critically and kind of form my thoughts on it, if that makes sense. When you listen to this episode, you might think it's all over the place, honestly. And it might be, because I tend to ramble a lot. I think this is one of my top games of the year, easily top five, because it's just been fun. And that's the most important thing to me, is fun, and that I enjoy it thoroughly. There's not one part of the game that I have not enjoyed playing it, despite the fact that I've said, oh, it's not as open as Super Metroid, and the music obviously is not as good. But it's fun. It's one of my top five games of the year right now, easily, hands down. It's not even a question. And it probably will be close to in that category when it comes time to pick, you know, end of the year games and stuff. It definitely will be. It made me care more about Samus as a character. And it made me appreciate Samus more as a character as well than previous Metroid games had. And if you've listened to the show before, you know that is why I love God of War so much, is because it took a franchise or a character that I didn't have as much adoration or care for and made me care for it a lot. And something else that Dredd shares with God of War, they're just fun. Like, everything just invests you and pulls you in, and you, it's a time suck, and next thing you know, 4 or 5 hours have gone by. That's the mark of a great game right there. And that's something that I think tends to get overlooked when we try to do critical analysis of video games, is this game just fun? Yeah, it is. Don't take shots every time you hear me say the word fun, because I'm sure I've said it 87,000 times in the last 10 minutes. And I just, if you take away anything from this episode, if you're on the fence about it and hear me just saying, oh, well, it's not Super Metroid, don't let that be a deterrent, because this game doesn't have to be Super Metroid. Just as, you know, modern games don't have to be old games. You can have nostalgia for old games and still enjoy new games, obviously. And that's how it should be. That's how it should be. Older games should inspire the new, obviously, but new games should also chart their own path. And I strongly believe that. If you just stay beholden to the traditions of the past, you're doomed to die. That's kind of ominous. You're doomed to just keep making the same mistakes over and over. Not mistakes. You're doomed to put out the same game over and over, which is kind of the issues that Far Cry 6 is having right now, is that everyone's just like, oh, it's another Far Cry game. This is what Ubisoft does. So the fact that Dredd is what it is, I think, a fantastic achievement. And I really hope people buy it. I hope it sells well, because I do not want this to be the last Metroid game by any means. We're obviously going to have Prime 4, but I think 2D Metroid games are still very fun. I like this format and style of Metroid game. It's absolutely great. I'm obviously going to play Silksong when it comes out from Team Cherry, the sequel to Hollow Knight. I don't know if it's a direct sequel, but the next Hollow Knight style game from them. And I would play another 2D Metroid after this one. Absolutely. I don't know where there will be to go with the story, but I think it's fantastic. Did I mention this game is fun? It's super fun. All the power-ups, too. The power-ups are really cool. Old ones that return, new ones that return. They kind of shuffle up the order in which you expect to get the power-ups, which, if you guys know, you know, at the beginning, makes that super frustrating, because you don't have a power-up at the start that you normally get relatively quickly, and it makes traversal more tricky and more challenging. I'm not going to say what it is, but you probably already know. And I thought that was interesting to kind of deny you that power for a while, to kind of tease you with it, all these areas you could access with it, but we're not going to give it to you yet. I enjoyed that a lot. I thought that was really cool. So go out and buy Dredd, please. Do not pirate it, as the Kotaku article suggests you do, because for some reason this game is being emulated already. I don't know why. That's a discussion for another time, obviously. Go out and buy it. I think if you enjoy this type of game, if you enjoy a Metroidvania, you know, if you enjoyed Hollow Knight and Super Metroid, you will find something to enjoy in this game and you will have fun with it. I would highly recommend this game to anybody, even if they've never played a Metroid before. And don't let that be a barrier to entry for you either, because the game does a good job of explaining to you what's going on with the heavy exposition dump at the start of the game. And that's not a bad thing. It's Nintendo's way of bringing more people in. Not to mention, I don't think the way of making Super Metroid 20 something years ago is a viable way to make a Metroid game now, because you have to be able to draw in sales and new people. If I'm remembering correctly, Metroid hasn't made or sold over, I don't think any title in Metroid has sold over 3 million units, whereas Mario and Zelda sell tens of millions. So it makes sense that Nintendo doesn't want to make a lot of these, because they just don't make money. They're great games, but they just don't sell as well. And I really think that for us to get more Metroid, this game has to sell well. And we have to show Nintendo, hey, Samus is a great character. This is a great story. Samus deserves to be the third Nintendo mascot standing alongside Mario and Link. I think it takes time to get to that point, but, you know, she really does. And it's the first, one of the earliest game series that had a strong female protagonist. I think Metroid would not be the same if Samus was a dude. It just obviously wouldn't. Samus is just a fucking badass woman fighting space aliens and just have all these super cool powers and just takes no shit from literally anybody that she encounters, which I know is why Other M wasn't received as well. I've kind of read about how that game portrayed Samus. I think it was BS, but whatever. Go out and buy Metroid Dread. Trust me, you will not regret it. I promise you. I promise you. It's not Super Metroid, but it doesn't have to be. That's the last thing I'm going to say about Metroid and Metroid Dread. Now, before we end, I think you know what time it is. It's time for everyone's most favorite segment of all time, Pokédex Please. Our Pokemon and Pokédex corresponding entry this week comes to us from Generation 3. That would be the Ruby, Sapphire, Emerald generation alongside Fire Red and Leaf Green. So we're going back to the GBA days. The days when, the GBA is such a good console, but I'll digress. That'll be an episode for another time on how amazing the GBA is. Gen 3 Pokemon. Our Pokemon today is none other than Glalie. Glalie is the evolved form, I believe, of Snowrunt. Glalie is the evolved form of Snowrunt. And our Pokedex entry comes to us from Sapphire, Generation 3. Glalie has the ability to freely control ice. For example, it can instantly freeze its foe solid. After immobilizing its foe in ice, the Pokemon enjoys eating it in a leisurely fashion. So imagine this, and Glalie looks like a snowball with horns and a very angry face. So imagine you're walking along in wintertime and you happen to stumble across a Glalie. It has the ability to freely control ice, so if it feels threatened, guess what? It's going to instantly freeze you solid. Instantly. Do you know how fast instantly is? There's no time passage. It is instantaneous. So you're walking along and all of a sudden you just go frozen. You don't know what happens. Now, I am not a biologist or like a person that deals with dead bodies, so I don't know. I know freezing process normally happens over a long period of time. I don't know what happens to a body when it gets flash frozen. But I imagine that you still have some moments of time where your body is like, you know, dying, right? Your organs and body and brain are shutting down because your blood's not flowing. So just imagine in those fleeting moments of life you have left that Glalie just starts to eat you leisurely. The last thing you feel in this world before you succumb to the mortal coil is Glalie eating you because it froze you solid. Man, Pokemon are scary, I wish. I'm so glad that they don't actually exist in real life. That is our Pokedex Please entry for today. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of the SideQuesting Podcast. Thank you for listening to me contradict myself about how Metroid Dread is great on its own, but then also how it's not Super Metroid, even though I said I wouldn't do that. I really appreciate you guys tuning in. Like I said, if you want to follow me, you can find me on Twitter at The One True Sire. You can follow the podcast at PodSideQuest, also on Twitter. You can follow Tom on Twitter. He is at RedRival26. You can also follow him on Twitch, which is where he streams a bunch of different games. Tom will pretty much play anything with anybody. Twitch.tv/RedRival26. I don't know if it's forward slash, maybe. I don't know. Whatever slash is the slash you use for websites. You can follow us on Instagram where I post promotions of the show and interact with you guys. SideQuesting Podcast. I think that's everything. We're available wherever you can find podcasts, I think. And if we're not, let me know. I'll put it there so you can listen to it for sure. We've also been on this app called Good Pods. Good Pods is a smaller podcasting app, but it's really cool as it combines a podcast player with the aspects of social media. So you can follow people on there. You can post. You can make recommendations. We are in a gaming podcast group started by the guys over at Quit the Build, which is another fantastic podcast network. And we just talk and we listen to each other's podcasts. We have a great time. It's awesome. It's an awesome atmosphere. So if you're interested in checking that out, hit me up. Let me know. I can kind of show you the ropes or just download it and see for yourself. It's actually pretty great. Again, Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. As always, remember to take care of yourselves. Have a great day. And until next time, see you later.